Okay. Again, I am delighted to bring the STEPS program to the West Coast and to tell you a bit about how the program developed and how it actually works. And I, of course, as many people have said, we don't do these things in a vacuum, and I owe a great debt of gratitude to the other names that are on this slide. But in order to have you understand, in a way, what led to the development of STEPS is to know that I was not in this profession from the beginning, but actually came to the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Iowa after a 25 or 30 year career as a medical writer and editor. I came to the department to help write an interview for assessing personality disorders. And it was in the course of testing out parts of the interview with actual patients that I became interested in doing clinical work. Went back and did my MSW, did not get my MSW until I was 50. Moved over to the clinical side, and I was the new kid on the block. And guess what patients they couldn't wait to give me. So I suddenly had all these patients with borderline personality disorder, and I started working with them in the ways that I saw other people working. And one day I said to myself, I came to this much too late in my life, and if I keep doing what I'm doing, I won't have enough usable career time left to get these people better. So I went on a search for something else, and I discovered in Wheaton, Illinois, someone by the name of Norm Bartels at the DuPage County Health Department. And he had come up with a 12-week program that was cognitive behavioral, and it was called a systems approach to borderline personality disorder. And what it referred to was not only teaching emotion management and behavioral lifestyle skills to patients with borderline personality disorder, but also to all of those people in their system with whom they regularly interact. And one of the things that we know about this disorder is that over time, people with this disorder, in fact, interact with a very large number of health professionals, with various agencies, and oftentimes there is difficulty communicating or translating from one place to another. And certainly, one of the groups left out of that communication is often family members. I went over to Wheaton, Illinois, spent several days observing Norm's program, brought back his little 72-page manual, and over the next few years, developed a 250-page supplemental packet designed to be used with the manual. And at some point, Norm said, "This is your program. Put this stuff together and, you know, and go forth," which was an incredibly generous thing for him to do. And at that point, Bruce Fole, who is well known in the field of personality disorders and has been my wonderful friend and mentor for 18 years, said, "You need an acronym. We have to talk in initials in psychiatry, apparently." And I said, "That sounds like a very good project for you." And he came up with STEPS, which you see listed here. Don St. John is a physician assistant who had 15 years of family practice background, got a master's in psychology, and became very interested in doing medication management as well as therapy with patients with this disorder. And so he and I have been together for all of these years. And Dr. Don Black, who staffs the inpatient unit with mood disorders and personality disorders, since 1995 kept saying, "You need a grant, you need a grant, you need a grant," and a couple of years ago said, "Sit down, we're writing a grant." And so we are, excuse me for zipping through there. We, in fact, are supported by a four-year NIMH grant to study the STEPS model. Now let's talk about what the model is. First of all, it is a group format. This allows people to see that other people struggle with this disorder, but almost more importantly, the group acts as a mirror for one another. One of the characteristics of personality disorders is often that patients with a personality disorder do not have a lot of insight into what their behaviors look like. But when they see it in someone else, the light bulb goes off and they begin to realize that perhaps this is how they appear as well. My original degree is in teaching, and I very much prefer a teaching approach to therapy. I believe that knowledge is power, and so this is very much a psychoeducational approach. It is manual driven. The manual is 325 pages and is available on a CD-ROM. The first half of the manual contains the facilitator guidelines. There is a very detailed, specific lesson plan for each of the 20 weeks, including what materials are needed and how to do it. The second part of the manual contains the weekly lessons, and they are printed out and given to patients to keep in a red notebook, which becomes a resource patients can turn to. It is cognitive behavioral combined with skills training. And in many ways, I believe that one of the most important outcomes is the development of a common language in which to talk about the disorder and the treatment. I mentioned earlier that people with this disorder tend to be in a variety of, in contact with a variety of professionals in the system. And the delivery of mental health services is incredibly interdisciplinary. I think it is its strength, but I think for patients with this disorder that also at times can be its detriment. And that is because every specialty has its own language. And even though all of those professionals may be giving the same message, I do believe that oftentimes people with this disorder have difficulty processing the information that comes in different forms. And so I will say something to a patient, and the patient will say, oh, but my psychiatrist said, oh, but my voc rehab person said, oh, but my case manager said, and what do we say? We say, oh, those darn borderlines, they're always splitting the treatment team. And again, I think it is not an attempt to split the treatment team or to be manipulative, but that oftentimes hearing these different languages really feels to them as though they are getting different messages. So having a common language in which everyone, including family members and all those in their system, communicate is extremely helpful, and as you will see as we go on, can also have a very calming effect. I was looking for sort of an integrating principle, and I found that I was drawn to Jeff Young's schema-focused therapy for personality disorders, and with his blessing and permission, we took his 365-item questionnaire, schema questionnaire, and reduced it to 64 items, which patients fill out and identify their underlying schemas. We wanted to stay away from jargon language, and we came up with the term cognitive filter. And it is at the time that a filter is activated that we get the most extremes of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And we are constantly relating their behaviors, thoughts, and feelings back to the filter that has gotten activated. The term reinforcement team is the name given to all those people in their system with whom they regularly interact and with whom they will share information about their disorder, and it will be part of the patient's responsibility, along with us as group leaders, to teach this model and teach this language to those members of their reinforcement team. And in many ways, I think this also is an extremely important feature, and that is that we are teaching the patient to use his or her support system more effectively, but at the same time, we are teaching the support system more effective ways of responding to the patient. And We are noticing as we are collecting data, but interestingly enough, much of the sort of impetus for this has come from managed care companies who have also noted that the clients who are in the STEPS model have fewer hospital days, fewer emergency room visits, and are costing them less. And this, of course, has made it very attractive. We refer to STEPS as a value-added or supplemental treatment, meaning that we add the STEPS group to whatever treatment the person is already getting. And we are, as part of our current study, we are tracking the frequency of individual therapy appointments. And in addition to decreasing the frequency of individual therapy, it appears that it also decreases some of the dependence on the individual therapist and may also decrease some of the alternate over-idealization and devaluation when you have just an individual therapist. As we said, it includes the reinforcement team. And although the program was originally designed as an outpatient program, in fact, it is being implemented in a variety of settings, including partial hospital, day treatment programs, residential treatment, and one of the things about residential treatment, of course, is that you have basically a captive audience, and you can adapt the program to that population. While our outpatient program is 2 hours, is a 2-hour session, for clients in residential treatment, if 2 hours is too much at one time, there's no reason that it can't be broken down into 2 1-hour sessions or 3 1-hour sessions. There is certainly the latitude to do this. We use it in our assertive community treatment. We actually have a program called IMPACT, which is an integrated multi-agency proactive community treatment program, or in our we refer to it as Iowa's Magnificent Proactive Community Treatment Program. And the STEPS program has received a lot of interest from the corrections setting. We have the program in 3 women's prisons and 2 men's prisons, and have gotten some very nice feedback, and we actually have some data that has been collected along with a control group from one of the women's units, and hopefully we will be able to report on that. STEPS focuses on the present. We tell patients that it is not because the past is not important, but because we cannot go back there and redo it. We are trying to reduce the impact of the past on the present and the future. Patients learn to manage their disorder much as they learn to manage a chronic medical disorder. Move away from seeing themselves or being viewed as a victim, and they are not allowed to blame others. And again, there may be situations where some blame could be assigned, but we know that blame does not move people forward. As I've mentioned, it's their responsibility to help teach their skills to others in their system, and we have done some surveys of both patient and therapist acceptance and found very positive results. The recommended format, as I said, in the basic outpatient program is once a week for 20 weeks for 2 hours. We like to have 2 facilitators for 6 to 10 trainees. Now, a word of caution, and that I always give people, especially when they're starting their first STEPS group, is screen and bring in about twice as many people as you hope to have in the finished group. And you will find when you're first getting started that you will have a relatively high dropout rate. What I find is that facilitators become more and more skillful, but I think what also happens in the community is that the word spreads among the patients with this disorder that this is a good thing to do. And we've talked about the reinforcement team. When the 20 weeks are over, and by the way, when the group starts, it is then closed for 20 weeks. We try to stagger the starting times so that people do not have to wait an excessive amount of time to get into treatment. People at the end of 20 weeks, a few people will decide that they'd like to repeat the group. The majority go on to a follow-up program that meets twice monthly for a year and works on advanced skills. Now, with that program, we have what I call rolling admission because, of course, people have all the basic language, and they just come in on whatever skill we're working on in Stairways, and they stay in until they've completed the 12-month sequence. It is a three-step program, so we need 9 more to play with the big guys. But the first step is what we call the awareness of illness, in which we go over the criteria, and then we reframe this as an emotional intensity disorder. However, throughout the manual and throughout our teaching, we use BPD/EID interchangeably. But it seems that the term emotional intensity disorder really resonates. And then we have a section on emotion management training and a section on behavior management training. Now, in Norm Bartle's original model, he used a 5-point scale for the emotional intensity, but it was not operationalized. It was a fairly abstract concept. However, he characterized the emotional intensity outburst as a tornado. And interestingly enough, a patient brought in a drawing she had done years before when she was in a facility and somebody asked her to draw the way she felt. And of course, being in the Midwest, we have tornadoes, and we thought that weather symbols were a very good metaphor. And we operationalized this emotional intensity as a 5-point scale, starting with number 1 would be baseline, 2 would be the beginning of intensity, on through development, and finally to the blow up. And very cleverly came up with these weather symbols. You will see down the side that we, for each emotional intensity event, we look at a very brief, and the key word is brief, description of the event. We're not concerned about the event. We're concerned about the reaction to the event. And for people to learn to identify at each level the feelings, physical sensations, thoughts, the cognitive filters that are activated, their action urges, and their actual behaviors. We will see later as we go on, we actually use the continuum to write out challenges to distorted thoughts, what skills they used, and so forth. So this was our emotional intensity continuum sheet, and it's a worksheet, and they pick it up every week. They're asked to take their emotional temperature daily and to write down what it looks like. The idea being that this becomes an early warning system. You become so aware of what is happening at each level of intensity, and that at any given moment, if someone says to you, where are you, you can give a number. Or a patient calls in crisis, my response is, my response is not what is going on. My response is, what number are you? And numbers are neutral. Words carry lots of emotional intensity. I used to get to group early and put the drawings up on the board, and I am the world's worst artist. And in one of my groups, pretty soon one of the members started getting there earlier than I did and putting up the drawings, and they were much, much better. And before a particular group was about to end, she said, next week there will be new drawings. And I walked in the next week, and this is what she had put on the board. And she said, you know, I have no more control over the weather than I do my emotional intensity, but I can control pots on a burner. And certainly pots on a burner are a universal metaphor. And then down the side, she had tools, and I actually, for my longer presentations, I have her on videotape talking about how she uses her tools. The interesting thing is, and I think this has been one of the strengths of the STEPS model, while it is highly structured, and the manual is very specific, I also encourage patients and facilitators to bring their own creativity to teaching these skills. And in one of our groups, they came up with a volcano in various stages. And of course, for a long time, I thought to myself, well, this is an even more irrelevant metaphor for most of the country. But of course, thinking of what's going on in the Northwest right now, this may be very relevant. And then, recently, another group in another community came up with the pots on the burner, but for the emotional intensity, but they also wanted to have a way to indicate sort of the other extreme, and that was having the emotional numbness. And so they came up with the idea of an iceberg. And at the highest level of emotional numbing, that iceberg was intact, and then it starts to change, and then you get to the calm place, and you can also go in the other direction. Another group came up with what they called a V continuum, in which they indicated at each level their inward expression, and then in the other direction their outward expression. So, in one of my groups, they came up with bands of color for each of the levels. And again, they're using this tool, but they're personalizing it in a way that is meaningful for them. In our group room where we do our classes, we have three or four different piles of the continuums, and we just tell them to take whichever one they want that week. And so sometimes they'll take the pots, sometimes they'll say, oh, I'm going to do weather symbols this week. But the process is the same. Now, when they first start identifying their emotional intensity continuum, we have them start with one baseline, no heat under the burner, tell me the kinds of things you're thinking, feeling, doing. And these are the kinds of things that they put down. And everybody's are somewhat different, but the group also helps to stimulate one another in thinking about these things. Now, so we get their one column. And then if I were to say, what happens next, of course, what would they say? I'm at 5. Exactly. So we go to 5. What does it look like? And these are the kinds of intense emotions and feelings, and this is where we have the behaviors and the self-harm and the suicidal behavior. And then we say, okay, now what is happening right before here? And then we go to 4. So remember, at 5 we had rage, at 4 we have anger. Remember, at 5 we had suicidal behavior, at 4 we have suicidal thoughts. This is the introduction of the idea that there is a difference between thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And then what's happening right before that? At 5 you had rage, at 4 you had anger, at 3 you're frustrated. And what's happening right before that? And at 2 you're irritable. Again, we start to see there's different levels of intensity. And then we talk about cognitive filters, those important beliefs that are accepted without question, very hard to change because they are often outside of awareness until we become aware of them. Again, they're activated by events. And as we look at the common maladaptive filters, we see that these tend to be the list, starting with abandonment, amazingly enough, dovetailing very nicely with that first criterion. And so what people will find is that they are able to relate thoughts, feelings, and behaviors as being driven by filters. Now, we did develop an instrument to measure change, which is filled out weekly. It is called the BEST, or Borderline Evaluation of Severity Over Time. Bruce Fole and myself have developed this, and it looks at thoughts and feelings, negative behaviors, as well as positive behaviors, and it is again rated on a 5-point scale as to how much difficulty they had with the thoughts and feelings and negative behaviors over the previous week, the thoughts and feelings and the negative behaviors coming directly from the DSM criteria. They put their weekly score on a chart. Therefore, they begin to see over time that there's a change. They can watch their progress as their scores come down, which happens starting about week 6 and actually follows very nicely along with their Beck Depression Inventory scores. In a typical session, they fill out the BEST form. We always have some kind of relaxation exercise, review their emotional intensity continuum, including the percent of time they spent at each level during the week. Because again, this gives them a more realistic view of the fact that they are not always at a 5, and that they have time at the other levels as well. They have a card in which they track the skills they've used during the previous week, We review their homework assignment, introduce and read through the new lesson, and assign homework. These are the names of the five emotion management skills that form the basic vocabulary for talking about the emotional intensity episodes, followed by the behavior management areas. And I was just very excited yesterday to listen to Dr. Frankenberg stress the importance of lifestyle behaviors, because when the emotional intensity is out of control, it affects these behaviors. When the behaviors are out of control, it has a major impact on emotional intensity. So we cannot have one without the other. We have at least one two-hour evening education session for the reinforcement team during the time they are in the group. And following the two-hour education session, which is usually sometime between week 4 and week 8, they can bring anybody from their system to any two regular sessions. And what they report is increased support from those people. And people bring a wide variety of reinforcement team members. We have specific materials. We give them a card with the criteria and talk about what they look like. They're given a copy of the emotional intensity continuum. We have a brochure that, we also have a skill card with suggested responses. I'll give you those responses in a minute. And actually, very creatively, one of our patients reduced it down to a very small size, brought it in and laminated it, and brought us 100 of them recently for people to give out to members of their reinforcement team. We were giving them just the larger size. Again, patients take great pride in helping to do this better. There are four questions that we recommend that anyone in their system respond with. And you don't have to know what the skills are. You just have to name them, and it's the patient's responsibility. From our pilot data, which was not randomly controlled, but I did report on it a couple of years ago, we did find a decrease in negative behaviors, and their mean Beck depression inventory scores decreased along with the PANAS, the negative and positive affect scale. Now, I also recently, we had some of the people I trained in the Netherlands, and wanted to just share that with you, because STEPS is used in more than 50% of their mental health centers since I was there in 1998. They have reported on a study of 85 patients and found significant improvement in all of these areas, and that it is well accepted by patients. One of the Dutch psychiatrists is now moving to to Norway, where they are instituting STEPS as part of a national health initiative, so we are very excited about that. Our current research grant will test the efficacy of STEPS compared to treatment as usual. We are recruiting 160 adults, and you can see what it is we are doing here. And we have developed a therapist adherence form, and therapist fidelity is rated through supervision and blind ratings. We videotape all our sessions. We will follow all of the subjects in the research grant, whether they were in treatment as usual or had STEPS added to treatment as usual for a year, and of course hope to show that STEPS subjects will have better improvement than treatment as usual in these areas, and that their gains will be maintained over 1 year. We have done some interim analysis on our first two groups, and interestingly, and I think this really reflects some things that have been said here, and that is where we are starting to really see the two groups part is several months out after they have finished the STEPS group. And I've mentioned stairways, which does reduce the abandonment fears as STEPS comes to an end. These are the names of the skills. And that manual will be finished shortly. And that is the end of this brief presentation. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you.
residents of Iowa City. However, there are STEPS groups expanding throughout the country, and certainly many areas that don't have them, which of course we know is a problem with all effective therapies right now for DBT. However, if you will email me and you have my email address on your handout, I will send you a list of all of the STEPS groups that I know of in the U.S. and in Canada. And of course, you know, the list, I know that even when I send out the materials, I always request that they tell me when they're starting a group and give me contact information. They don't always do that, but I will certainly do my best to let you know where groups are. And this certainly can be used by individual therapists who, you know, at this particular point are not interested in starting a group. I have had patients buy the CD-ROM and take it to their therapist and work through it with their therapist.
Thank you. Great, thank you. And, you know, I might add at this point, because throughout this afternoon's session, I've had several cards that have been requesting referrals, basically, either for DBT or for transference-focused therapy or MBT-oriented kinds of therapy. And I want to refer you to the back of the room or at the end of this conference, because there is a table there where you can find referral sources, and certainly people there can answer some of your questions or refer you to the right websites or email addresses or whatever. Okay. Let's see. Are there currently any STEPS programs here in the Los Angeles area?
There is not in the Los Angeles area, but there is one currently going at San Luis Obispo Community Mental Health Center. The person facilitating that is Matt Cherman, and I actually will be coming back to California to do some training in February.
Oh, great. And where do I purchase the STEPS program?
It's on a CD-ROM. We are currently negotiating with a publisher at the moment. It is self-published until that happens. And if you contact me, I probably have some order forms in my folder that are with me. But feel free to email me, and I will just send an order form as an attachment.
How do you integrate a therapist who is treating someone in a STEPS group when the therapist is not trained in STEPS?
Very good question. And what we ask when a patient is referred to the STEPS group, and the greatest number of our referrals come actually from individual therapists who know about our program. What we require is that during the time the patient is in the STEPS group for those 20 weeks, that the individual therapist support the STEPS model, which simply means the patient brings his or her red notebook to each individual therapy session, goes through the lesson, reviews homework, and if there is a specific content issue, that it is dealt with then in terms of their emotional intensity continuum and in using the skills that they are learning.
Great.
I find that therapists are very grateful to have this kind of structure and focus for those 20 weeks.
And what do you see as the similarities and differences in the skills of STEPS versus DBT?
It's a very frequent question, obviously, that comes up. One of the things that I want to say is that I think it's accurate to say that STEPS and DBT both draw on common principles of cognitive behavioral therapy, but that the designs are different in terms of how group leaders are trained. Much less training seems to be needed for facilitators to do a STEPS group, and that therapists who come from widely varied therapeutic backgrounds are able to facilitate STEPS groups. One of our concerns is, first of all, the availability of therapists. We, as well as other mental health professionals in many areas of the country. If you live in urban areas, it's hard to visualize, but we have osteopathic physicians, for instance, in the state of Iowa, who have to serve as psychiatrists for several rural counties. And again, to find a wide variety of, to find specialists specifically trained therapists can be very difficult. There is, again, a very heavy structure to the syllabus with detailed lesson plans and that fixed sequence of 20 sessions. And also in the way that it is designed to interface with other mental health facilities. One of the things that, to me, has been, you know, that actually was very attractive to me that was integrated with DBT was the concept of mindfulness and the Zen teachings. And I go to a mindfulness class, and I do yoga and all of these things, and I recommend them for my patients. However, it's very interesting to me in our part of the country. I had an experience just a few weeks ago where I always write some little phrase on the conference room board, and I wrote down, it is incredibly freeing to know that I do not have to be pleased in order to be happy. And it was our advanced group, and I walked in the group room, and I said, any reactions to what I wrote on the board? And one of the people looked at me and said, that is way too Zen for me. I am a Christian, and I don't want that. I was just blown away. But and we are 60 miles away from Fairfield, Iowa, which is the home of Maharishi University and Transcendental Meditation. And, you know, in college towns, we talk about the distinction between town and gown. In Fairfield, Iowa, they divide the town into town folk and floaters. And so we have found that we have to be very careful. And we've really had to stay away from the concept of mindfulness. My colleague, Bruce Fole, who's also very much into mindfulness and meditation, the other day, said, you know, do you notice how few we have a wonderful teacher in our department. He said, do you notice how few of the people in our department actually sign up for the mindfulness meditation class? So that was certainly something that came as a surprise to me. The other thing is that we do allow patients to continue to in group even if they are participating in self-harm behaviors or they get hospitalized. If they're hospitalized in our hospital, I think they really need to be at group. Now, if there is substance abuse or a severe eating disorder, I do require that they be in treatment simultaneously for that problem and that we have communication between the STEPS program and whatever program they're in, because I don't think that you can do good cognitive work with someone who is abusing substances or is in the throes of a severe eating disorder because the brain is just not working properly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How does this differ in context to the plans from Recovery, Inc.?
You know, this is very interesting, and I have listened to some lectures on plans for recovery. I think they're probably that they could work very nicely together. Much of the emphasis in our part of the country in mental health treatment has been on what they call rehabilitation. And this fall, Don Black and I published an article about the STEPS program, and in the editorial at the beginning of the journal done by John Livesley, he referred to STEPS as an example of a rehabilitative therapy. And I had not used that term before, but I really do like that term. And as they say, I think it would work very nicely with the recovery program.
All right, with that, I think we're
good.
Done.
Thank you
very
all.
Much, Nancy.
Okay.